Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. I'm James Atkinson, brand manager at Decoder Witness.
And I'm Lucy Richards, senior editor at Decoder Witness. And today we're taking a virtual trip around the world to visit Tokyo.
Yes. So a few facts that I had pre-prepared about Tokyo. The capital of Japan is actually the most populous metropolitan area in the world, with more than 37 million residents making up the Greater Tokyo area as of 2020. But its huge size isn't necessarily what makes Tokyo so unique. That would be the blend of tradition seamlessly intersecting with the ultra-modern, as visitors can stroll amid serene shrines and peaceful gardens 1 minute, and then be naturally surrounded by futuristic skyscrapers, rowdy karaoke bars, and neon-lit arcades the next.
Yes, it's truly a city like no other, and the eyes of the world are likely to be firmly on it this summer as it hosts the delayed 2021 Olympic Games.
Yes, so to discuss the city as well as those games and kind of everything that's been happening in recent times, as well as her love for the city, we've got another Lucy. We've got travel writer Lucy Damon.
Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy and James. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to do this. A little bit nervous, but I'm excited.
Oh, don't be at all,
we're quite nice.
Yes, we won't bite at all. And huge thanks for joining us all the way from Tokyo as well.
Yeah, no worries. Like I said, like we were saying earlier in the chat, there's nothing to do after 8 right now, so this is the most excitement I've had in a long time in the evening, so thank you.
It's great to hear that. Cool.
So to explain the format today, we're going to explore the past, present and future of Tokyo, discussing what makes the city so unique, life outside of COVID-19, how Tokyo's residents have responded to the events of the last year and what travellers can expect to do when they return.
For context, we're recording this in late February and a number of areas in the country, including Tokyo, are currently in a state of emergency with tougher restrictions coming into effect in early January. Travellers from many countries are currently barred from entering Japan, including the United States and Great Britain, unless there are exceptional circumstances. So with that covered, let's discuss all things Tokyo. In this first section, we're going to look at Tokyo outside of the context of the current pandemic and get a taste for what the city is like in more normal times. So Lucy, I wanted to kind of start with, obviously, you're from Australia originally, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When did you move to Tokyo and why?
I moved to Tokyo in the summer, Tokyo summer of 2016, which is the same summer as you, like June, July. I moved from Melbourne, but I'm originally from like super country town. And mm-hmm. I came here, I've been asked this question so many times and I've never sat down to give it a good answer, right? But essentially, I had a little bit of a quarter-life crisis in Australia. Nothing too dramatic, mm-hmm. I just didn't know what I was going to do anymore. So I'd been to Japan on vacation a couple of times and I thought maybe I'll just come here, take like a working holiday kind of thing, be an English teacher mm-hmm. for 12 mm-hmm. months and just see what it's like. And then I've just never left and it's been about 5 years now. Yeah.
Oh, and wow. did you adapt quickly or did it take a while to kind of find your feet?
Well, I came as an English teacher, so they have a lot of like easy pathways to kind of live in Japan. They organize housing for you and all that sort of mm-hmm. stuff. It's yeah. kind of like their job is just to import foreigners for a year. So it's pretty, everything's kind of set up for you in a certain regard, but I think there were some like different day-to-day things that were hard to adapt to, especially like I'm Australian, so I thought I could handle heat, but Tokyo summer is just insane. I don't know, have either of you really? Been to Tokyo?
No, never. I've always dreamed of going, yeah. but it's yeah. quite far away from Britain, so yeah. I think it's you have to make that bit more effort. But yeah, I was really, really hoping to go and do a bit of a tour of Japan. Been on my sort of bucket list for ages, yes. basically. Yeah. So I was very much looking forward to this episode. But yeah, I mean, I know Tokyo kind of gets extremes of weather, right?
Yeah, it has all the four seasons, which I think a lot of Tokyo tourism people love to promote, four distinct seasons. But it definitely does. Tokyo summer here is insanely humid. So I remember coming mm-hmm. and I was a little bit like nervous because I've just arrived and I had to meet the manager from the school and the summer was so hot. I had to wear like corporate clothes, which is the first time I've ever had to wear okay. like corporate outfit and like a white shirt. And I never knew I could sweat that much. And it was like the most embarrassing day of my life having to like leave and get changed and come back. So that was a bit of a shock. But I don't know. I think Tokyo is like so different, but at the same time, life is relatively easy. I'm sure some people would disagree with that, but in terms of like convenience and figuring stuff out, it's a pretty safe place to find a feet, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. And what did what were your first impressions of Tokyo? You said you'd been there on holiday before.
Yeah.
But actually, kind of moving there and living in it, was it kind of quite daunting or was it kind of easy to move around?
I think I came, yeah, I'd come here to ski like so many Australians do, and I came here mm-hmm. as well to just do the golden route, which is Osaka, Kyoto and like Tokyo. And so when I came here mm-hmm. to live, I moved to Yokohama, which is like a little bit outside of Tokyo. It's another city, but it's quite like mm-hmm. it's maybe 30 minutes. So kind of I think like that was interesting to actually see like neighborhood Tokyo, because I think a lot of people who visit Tokyo don't see like Shibuya, yeah. Shinjuku, the main things. So seeing like
yeah.
residential side of Tokyo is quite interesting. I don't think it was really a shock, but it was quite like fascinating to see like little neighborhoods which you just never have exposure to as a tourist, I don't think. And then I think like the biggest shocks or just really boring admin stuff. So registering yourself at City Hall, getting a phone, getting a bank account, all that sort of stuff it's still kind of a mystery to me.
So you mentioned, I love that exactly as you're saying, kind of leaving the centre of a city and going and finding that real city and those neighbourhoods that people actually live in. Mm-hmm. So what are sort of some of your favourite parts of Tokyo? You know, where would you recommend people visit and hang out?
I was thinking about this question and I do get asked it kind of often, but Tokyo is like, just so many, like a million different cities in one city. Every neighborhood is so, so different. So I think it really yeah. depends on like what you're interested. So I guess James and Lucy, what are you interested in? Maybe I can tell you what I would recommend.
Okay, so what do you want to see? We'll start with restaurants. So like where if you were looking, I know Tokyo has like the most Michelin stars in the world, right?
Yeah.
But actually, Michelin stars aside and stuff, just good food. Tell me where to go.
Good food. Okay. What is your favorite food? See, that's it. It's like every area has like a different food. Okay. It's so bad.
Okay, let's start with like kind of Japanese food. Like where's some like really good, like kind of cheap eats and...
Yeah, sure. So that was another kind of shock for me is everything, like in terms of eating in Japan, you can eat really good for really cheap. I don't know. I haven't spent that much time in the UK, but in Australia, at least, if you want to eat cheap food and good food never kind of cross. you know? So it's like bad and cheap.
That's good to know.
Or good and expensive. Okay. So cheap food is, cheap food is, the standard is really high. So I think like if you want to eat like a street food, like kind of, I think like, you know, like Nippori, which is kind of like old town, they say Shittamachi, which is like downtown area. It wasn't, it wasn't impacted by the earthquake in like 1923, so it still kind of keeps this old Tokyo area, Tokyo atmosphere, and it has a lot of like street food and street snacks, which I think are really great.
That sounds great. Yeah, definitely want to go there. And then how about, James and I both love live music or live entertainment. Where would we go for like, you know, in a non-COVID world, where would we go for like a great night of live entertainment?
Non-COVID world, imagine that. I'd say like Shimokitazawa, which is maybe like one or two stops from Shibuya. It's kind of like this area, they say like bohemian, which I sound like my mom saying like bohemian, but it's kind of like, it has a lot of like a small live venues and some really great bars. So there's another area called Koenji as well. It used to be like the punk capital, and it has a little bit of that punk vibe still. Yeah. You can just go venue hopping really, but it's really expensive to see live music in Tokyo.
That's right. I'd fork out anything, whatever. I just want to see some live music or entertainment. Doesn't matter the cost. I'll pay.
Yeah, that's great.
I was going to say it as well. Like, I know lots of people have, you know, obviously been very connected to their cities and outside space in the last couple sort of year or so. And Tokyo is quite famous for like, there's lots of gardens and green spaces, right? So on a different kind of level, where would you go for that?
Yeah, I think it, like, yeah, there's so many incredibly beautiful parks in Tokyo. I think my favorite, personally, my favorite park, which is not so beautiful but always interesting, is like Yoyogi Park. So that's near Harajuku Station. It's maybe the most famous. It's like Tokyo's backyard, I guess. You see the strangest activities there. You see the most unique people. You have, it has a lot of like a cherry blossom, so Hanami time is really great there too. It's a really big park. There's also one that people don't really know, which I love, is called Meguro Sky Garden, and it's basically a park on top of maybe a library that's like 9 floors high. So that's really amazing to kind of watch the sunset and see like the city skyline and this like long park that you don't, it feels like never ending. It's amazing. But yeah,
that sounds lovely. Yeah, definitely really want to go there.
Yeah. That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah.
And then how about kind of earlier on, Lucy, you hit on the fact that summer was really hot, which I don't think I appreciated. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular time that people should go to Tokyo? Like, do you recommend a time of year, or is it just great all year round if you can manage the heat in summer?
I'd say not summer. I'd say not in like that June, between like a June and like August. That's why like the Olympics being held around that time is kind of amazing. They had to move, they were planning to move the marathon, I think, up north because it's just too hot. So, you know, spring is beautiful. We're right on the cusp. It's just about to become spring. We have like a plum blossom.
Lovely.
So plum blossoms, pre-cherry blossoms, which are beautiful. Nice. So spring is beautiful if you don't have allergies. And then winter is so nice here. It's super, like, the air is really dry, but the sky is like such a crisp, beautiful blue. It's like actually amazing because like in Australia, our winters are so gray and wet. But seeing like a beautiful crisp winter is so nice, and like autumn is pretty underrated. It's possibly equally as beautiful as the cherry blossoms. I think, yeah, if you ask locals between like a cherry blossom time and autumn time, maybe they will choose autumn, I think.
Really? Yeah. Is that because then they get an influx of tourists in springtime? Do you think that's why they kind of lean towards
maybe
autumn, or is it kind of the fiery colors of autumn?
I think it's the fiery colors. I hope it's not, they don't want more people here. I think people love, like, I think Japanese people seem quite like proud of a cherry blossom, so I don't think it's that. I think it's just, it's the temperature is perfect, you know, and the fiery colors are insane. Like Kyoto is so beautiful in autumn.
Yeah.
Cool. And I kind of wanted to ask this question because I know in lots of people's heads, like, Tokyo is many things to many people. It's kind of you know, it's the geek capital of the world. It's the it's, you know, this really sacred traditional place. It's and I wanted to kind of ask about like some of the stereotypes around Tokyo and if there's any kind of myths you'd like to bust around how people conceive of it outside of Tokyo.
I think there's one myth that's maybe dying a little bit now. Well, I hope. I kind of even got caught up in this myth when I first came to visit maybe 2015 was that, you know, Harajuku is this crazy kind of like a Gwen Stefani's Harajuku girls. Yep. Sunday, yeah, they all dress up and go there. It doesn't exist. It like literally doesn't exist. And I think that that's just a trend that kind of passed. And maybe the hangover, the idea is still kind of there. People who haven't been here for 10 years maybe still think it exists, but that definitely doesn't exist. I think also like Japan being like a Tokyo being super high tech is still a little bit of a like fallacy now. I think there's some things that are like kind of novel and high tech, like a robot concierge working in some hotels. But in terms of like tech, it's kind of falling behind a little bit. For example, like after 10 p.m., sometimes you cannot get money out of your ATM because the bank is shut, which is a mystery. But also helps if you're not drinking too much, right? It's good.
Exactly.
It's like a safety lock.
Go home now.
That is surprising. I wasn't expecting you to say that. I would have thought that it would be uber high tech.
Well, Uber everywhere. Uber doesn't exist in Tokyo. Or Uber Black does, but regular Uber doesn't exist here. That's another thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's interesting too. I also think people think Tokyo is Japan, and like there's so much of Japan outside of Japan. There's so many different cultures. So I think people who come to Tokyo think they've been to Japan, and I think maybe they're missing out on a little bit. But Tokyo is still amazing too.
Yeah, I think, actually that kind of leads quite nicely onto, kind of Japan. It's a question about Japan itself, and like kind of thinking about, you know, have you managed in your six years of living over there, have you managed to get about and explore a lot of Japan?
Yeah, I don't mean to create, it's only 5 years, but it doesn't really matter. I don't really care. But anyway, so like, I'm really lucky. I think because I came here and started doing travel writing, I had a lot of opportunities leading up to the Olympics. There was a big push because, you know, they expected last year, 40 million tourists come, international inbound tourists, which is kind of insane, but like as insane, like it's massive. So there was a huge push towards tourism and kind of pushing people out of that what they call the golden route, which is Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, sometimes Hiroshima, and like back, because it's really a really small portion. So there are a lot of like fam trips and like media trips that I went on like all over Japan. So I was counting the other day for something, and I think I've been to 37 of the 47 prefectures. So I'm 10 prefectures off, like 10 states off clocking it. So I've been I'm lucky enough to have been to a couple of places. Yeah.
That's pretty good going for 5 years.
Yeah,
<That's>,
definitely.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And where kind of, what were your favorite parts? Like where would you recommend going? If you were kind of coming into Japan via Tokyo, where would you say you should definitely head towards?
I think like for like a big vacations, I would say like you have to head like a down south. So there's like the main island of Japan is like a Honshu, which kind of all the big players are on. And then you have two smaller islands. One is called Shikoku and one is called Kyushu. And they're both really beautiful. Shikoku has like a really like fascinating kind of like Ie Valley is a really fascinating mountainous area there. They have like, I don't know if you've seen the town, I think it got a little bit famous. There was like a town called like a Nagatoro, I think. And basically like an old lady started making dolls because the population was really small. Have you seen this place? Maybe not.
Yeah. Do you know, that's not unfamiliar to me. Yeah. Weirdly, that does ring a bell.
It got weirdly famous, but basically it was this tiny town that was like the population was decreasing. It's kind of sad, but it's kind of has a happy ending. So she was making these dolls to kind of replace the people who left or passed away. And this town is kind of spooky. It's all these kind of random dolls. I went there like late last year, but it's creating a lot of tourism too, so I guess it's kind of beneficial.
Sure.
But also down south, like towards like Taiwan, there's like Okinawa. I don't know if you've heard of Okinawa, which is, it's insane. The beaches there are like crazy, crazy beautiful. The water's so clean. The culture's quite different. It's a combination of like Chinese culture and Japanese culture. Food's great. People are laid back. It's like a Fiji, like the Fiji of Japan, kind of.
Very nice.
I can't remember where. I've definitely seen like a documentary on like the food. It's got its own like kind of, it's a bit separate from the rest of Japan, and they've kind of developed their own food culture there, which looked quite incredible.
Yeah, they do. They're like also like the sushi and sashimi there is incredibly good. But yeah, they have a completely different food. Everyone there doesn't drink asahi, which is kind of like the main beer. Everyone drinks like Orion, which is kind of like the Okinawa version. It all tastes the same to me. It all tastes good. But yeah, it's a bit different. And it's like the islands that dot around that area are just incredible. I'm quite surprised because people love going up north to like Niseko for skiing, but it's like the complete opposite down the other end, and it's not that famous for international, at least Western tourists at the moment.
Because it is a huge country overall. I think we, you know, there is, going back to kind of myths of bus, like everyone almost thinks of Japan and Tokyo in the same sentence and thinks, oh, you can easily move around the country from there. But actually, Okinawa is probably a huge flight, right, from Tokyo. And and you know, you've got the kind of Hokkaido is the island in the north, which is really far up, you know, and really kind of extremely cold temperatures to very hot.
It's about three or four hours to go down south to Okinawa. So I guess it's kind of far, but like also like you said, Japan is kind of weirdly long, so it has everything, right, from the top to the bottom. But I guess coming from Australia, at least, like, we travel 3 or 4 hours in a car to get somewhere, it's nothing. Whereas if you travel 3 or 4 hours in Japan, you can see so many different things too, which is quite exciting.
How about then day trips, Lucy? What kind of day trips can be done from Tokyo?
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's like I love to go in the autumn time, like it's called like Ome River. So if you head, like, Tokyo is here, it's kind of like northwest. It's like Ome River, which is a really beautiful river, like an hour and a half out, and you can just kind of do a little walk or a little trek. If you want to go to the beach, there's beaches like Kamakura, which is down south, maybe 1 hour down south, and like Enoshima, which is another beach town. The beaches are not beautiful, but when it's summer, like, the culture is fun. They have kind of like beach houses. It's a party beach, kind of.
Nice.
Yeah, which is fun. Nice. The sand is so grey, but yeah.
I mean, I think that's you know, that's quite a bit of credit coming from an Aussie as well. If you've
well, the beaches. Yeah, I think maybe I have a higher standards, but also like where actually it was a national holiday here on Tuesday, and some friends and I went, just like, we wanted to go no further than 2 hours on the train, and we went to this area that's like, I think it's in Kanagawa, which is like the neighboring state. It's called, like, they have a lot of these kind of, I think it's like bubble era, like 1980s, 90s, like amusement parks back when Japan was really rich and domestic tourism was like really big. There's like these kind of like retro but unintentionally retro like amusement parks. So one is called like Yomiuri Land, which is like near Yokohama, which is not so far away. And the one we went to is called, which sounds like a, it sounds like a sex shop or something, it's called Pleasure Forest. So we went to Pleasure Forest. And it's just like a Paddington Bear themed, and then like beautiful fairy lights. Like, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
But those sort of things are so funny. Like, it's so,
I love that.
Unintentionally kitsch. So if you can get out to like Pleasure Forest, just have a crack. Have a go at Pleasure Forest for sure.
So, you know, the name is quite misleading.
I had a lot of fun.
It sounds great. I'd go there. Yeah, it sounds great.
In the very literal sense of the word pleasure.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a lot of pleasure, but that sounds odd. It's a very family-friendly destination, But there's so many others too, which is
normal. Cool. And finally, I mean, we'll kind of move on to you, to COVID and some of the Olympics and a more current view of Japan. But say sort of a year or so ago, pre-restrictions, pre-curfews and so on, what would be your kind of perfect evening in Tokyo if you could, like, or even like a perfect day if you had like an afternoon doing something and led it into an evening?
I think still outside is nice. Like, I think I do miss, like, which Tokyo doesn't have a lot of, is just like a beer gardens and outdoor areas. So I think, like, you know, having like, I think my perfect afternoon would be maybe having a few like a drinks in the park with some friends, kind of like a picnic style, and then hop on my bike. And one of my friends has a really amazing cafe called Maya Maya. He's an Australian guy and his wife is Japanese, and they just opened this new cafe almost a year ago now. It's like in this tiny neighborhood that's not really well known at all, but they've managed to, they basically tried to build a cafe around like kind of not the kind of typical Japanese way of using a cafe, which is just very isolated. They wanted to kind of invite people and kind of force everyone to have a conversation, which actually sounds awful, but it actually really works. So you meet so many amazing people there. So I would hop on my bike out, head out to, like, it's called Higashi Nagasaki. So near Ikebukuro, mm-hmm. It's still in central Tokyo, but super neighborhood area, and kind of mm-hmm. go to Mayamaya, have a few drinks. They have nice wine, a few local beers, good music. I listened to a Taylor Swift album, first time I ever listened to Taylor Swift, really, and I actually really enjoyed the new album. Folklore, I think.
Yeah, just need to make sure you've got all your cash out before 10 o'clock.
Yeah, then, right? Yeah.
If you're wild night out.
You're getting too much into the Taylor Swift. Yeah. Then,
I would say go head there, have a little drink outside, always outside, and then have not too many drinks that I can still ride my bike home, and that's probably it. Or I would also go out to like a Nichome, which is a really fun nightlife area. It's in Shinjuku. Nichome is like the gay area of Tokyo is what they call it. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of like a whole bunch of tiny bars. It's Golden Guy, it's like the famous tourist area for like tiny bars, but this is kind of tiny bars and nightclubs, and there's such an interesting mix of people, a lot of international people, a lot of like Japanese people all kind of hanging around and milling around this tiny, maybe one or two block kind of radius, and they have like a lot of interesting bars. There's one called New Sazae, which I think was on like the Queer Eye, recent Queer Eye episode. But
oh, cool.
Yeah, it has like a Freddie Mercury used to go there. That's kind of their claim to fame. But it's amazing place. It's really small, but it's got such an interesting cross-section of people. Like, you'll be dancing with like people in their 60s, 70s, cross-dresser,
cool.
straight or gay, doesn't matter. That's the most amazing little corner
great.
Of Tokyo, I think.
I love
that's
it.
That's great. Awesome. Well, that sounds like two great nights in Tokyo.
Yeah.
There you go. If you're planning an itinerary.
Kick-ons,
your
non-stop.
Your first day.
Yeah.
Obviously outside of the current times. And actually that brings us on to, you know, we'll talk about what Tokyo is like right now next.
So we're now going to quickly touch on what life is like in Tokyo right now. So Lucy, how has COVID-19 affected everyday life in Tokyo?
It's been a weird one for sure. So basically we've had everyone's wearing a face mask, so face mask adoption was pretty non-issue here, because I think a lot of people wear it for allergies, and also if they feel ugly or whatever, you wear a face mask. So that sort of kind of adjustment wasn't too bad. I think the everyday life is like obviously going in and out of lockdown a lot, which has been happening. It's opened up and everyone's feeling hopeful, and then, you know, we have a spike and we have to go back into lockdown. So that uncertainty has been a big issue. Also, which is kind of interesting, is like there's kind of an article in Japan's constitution that says that the government can't have too much control over an individual and their actions. So you cannot like force a lockdown in a house, for example, what they did in Australia, the government can't force that. So that's interesting.
Okay, because over here it's a law, but in Tokyo it's not. Sort of a stay-at-home order isn't a law?
No. It's not.
Or kind of, you know.
I don't want to make too many sweeping legal statements because I'm not a lawyer.
Sure.
But from my basic research, I'm not sure when it was implemented, but basically, yeah, the government doesn't have kind of like, you know, the government, Japan also doesn't have an army and stuff like that, but it doesn't have enough control. It cannot control what the individuals do. So basically, we can go out of the house. It's not breaking any laws. We can go out for drinks, all that sort of stuff. We don't have to wear a mask, but it's kind of wild if you don't, because everyone is. It's like being naked or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's that's about it. In and out of lockdown, kind of. We had I'll talk about it in a little bit. We had a domestic travel campaign which happened.
Well, yeah, I heard about that, because it was kind of obviously, and we'll again touch on the Olympics soon, but it was supposed to be such a big year for tourism, and obviously lots gearing up to that, as you were talking about earlier. So, you know, what was that kind of domestic tourism campaign like, and did it work? And did you manage to get out and see any more of the areas as well?
Yeah, it was basically, so yeah, I guess just before the, like, you know, in the lead up to the Olympics, so many hotels opened here. Everyone was buying, you know, prepping, getting ready for these 40 million tourists that are going to come in. So it was probably, like, every country's had a really hard time, but in terms of, like, economy and a shock, I think it's been a huge kind of swing for Japan. So that was interesting. So kind of a way to kind of help encourage, like, tourism business, because tourism is one of the biggest economies here, was to encourage people to travel domestically again. So there was this thing called the Go To Travel campaign. So basically the government, if you wanted to go somewhere, say I wanted to go back to Okinawa, the government would pay 50% of your flights and 50% of your accommodation, which is pretty great.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a job at a, like, some luxury hotel, and I think the minimum cost is about $700 US a night, but it was at, like, in September, it was at, like, 70% capacity, because a lot of people were trying to take advantage of these half-price deals. So I think that worked in terms of helping prop up some businesses, but not for everyone, of course. And, like, you know, these big luxury brands, these luxury companies are going to make a lot of money from the tourism because people want to stay there. They don't want to stay in those tiny little minchiku that need people that are kind of just scraping by, you know? So kind of regard, it didn't really work for them. Then there was some controversy around that. But also, yeah, I got to do a few, I snuck in a few little trips, sneaky trips. So, yeah, it was good. It was great.
Good.
You know, you get vouchers, like free money to buy food. They give you, if you check into the hotel, they give you, like, these vouchers, which was the equivalent of, like, $10. So you could just go and spend that, have a free dinner. Like, it was kind of crazy. The deals were crazy.
Yeah.
That sounds really nice.
That's great. Yeah.
I mean, in Japan, is, like, domestic tourism much of a thing? I know, I think around the world, one of the kind of effects of COVID really has been that people have been exploring their own backyard a little bit more, and because out of necessity really, but instead of going, you know, in the UK, instead of doing your summer holiday in France or Italy, you're going to you know, sort of to Northern England or to Yorkshire or to Dorset and different places. And has that kind of been the case in Japan? Do people usually leave rather than stay in Japan?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of, like, it depends on what type of work you do, but there's still a big, like, a salaryman culture here where you have to work, like, work overtime, and you get, like, 5 days. Like, when I worked as an English teacher, that's the only experience I can compare it to. I had, like, 5 days a year to choose. That was it. So, you know, like, a lot of people pack it in. Like, Japanese holidayers are amazing. Like, they'll go to New York for 3 days. Like, stuff like that, which blows my mind completely.
Wow.
So, like, you know, go in, do this. Like, my partner's Japanese, and, like, I've gone on holidays, and it's just, like, you pack so much in. It's insane. So that sort of stuff, I think people went overseas to do that, you know, go to Paris, see the Eiffel Tower, do this, do that. So I think it's interesting to kind of shift to, like, domestic tourism and maybe have to slow down a little bit is probably a good thing. So I think that's helped a lot. I think I heard in Niseko up north, where all the Australians go to ski, also a lot of people were there skiing. So Japanese people, obviously. So I think that people are exploring a bit more. Yeah.
And is the absence of tourists, has that been really noticeable or not?
It has been, especially in like a main tourist areas. So, like, for example, like Shibuya Crossing, or some people say Shibuya Scramble, like that big area.
Yes.
It feels like I ride through there every day because it's between, like, my house and my office. So I've seen it change, like, over the past, like, year, two years or whatever, and, like, to see all these people just taking pics and getting the pic. I used to love watching the tourists run to the middle before the lights turn red completely and get the photo. And so, like, I'm, like, dodging in between on my bike. So I kind of miss that. That's always entertaining, like, to watch that. But, you know, like, Shibuya Scramble is completely, it's, like, I'd say maybe 30%, 40% of what it usually is during a tourist time.
Wow.
And, like, Harajuku, the street in Harajuku is called, I always feel like I'm swearing when I say it, but, like, Takeshita Dori is always, like, usually busy. It's pretty empty too. A lot of places are shut down that kind of tourist area. Yeah.
And I think for quite a lot of people who live in big cities like Tokyo, like, the absence of tourists is whereas it's, like, really eerie, you're also kind of able to get about and explore a bit and actually see what these places look like without people. Has that been the same in Tokyo? Or, I mean, Tokyo has such a massive population that I imagine things might still be quite busy anyway.
Yeah, I think so. I think, like, there has been some, I'm trying to think, like, recently whether there's been anything in particular that I've got to explore because tourists haven't been there. But, like, there's a place called, like, a Genki Sushi, which is, like, super cheap sushi place, which is, like, even, like I said, cheap food is still pretty good. So I still like it. I'm not no sushi connoisseur, but I'm a sushi fan. So those sort of places being empty is really, really interesting and kind of sad. But I think for me and, like, for my everyday life, for, like, tourists not being here isn't, has it, like, or tourists being here actually isn't really a great hindrance to, like, where I go and what I see and what I do. Not that I'm, like, such a super local Japanese or something like that. It's just kind of the fact of these are the tourist areas, so most people kind of funnel into there, I guess.
Yeah for sure. And have you kind of been able to sort of personally due to sort of, I know you said it's not really a lockdown, but it's kind of lockdown, being able to explore sort of new sides to Tokyo yourself?
I think so, yeah. I love to get around the city, like, on my bike because I don't really do a lot of exercise otherwise, but it's so great. Like, I don't have to wear a helmet, which is so novel, but, and it's dangerous, but it's also comfortable. But also, I think just, like, seeing, because, like I said before, like, Tokyo is, like, so, so many different cities, and, like, the best way to kind of get around the city is to just get around by bike, because there's so, so many things to see and stop at and look at. And, like, even when I go with Japanese friends, we always, like, I recently discovered this area, which is literally down the back of my apartment, which I've just never, ever been, because there's so many other places to explore. So just exploring the back streets has been really exciting, which sounds sad, but it's actually exciting.
No, not at all. I think, you know, James and I, we've said exactly the same thing when we've been in lockdown. It's just actually you really rely on what's around you and rediscovering those places, and it's somehow really satisfying to explore your own backyard. There's something about it that's sort of strange. I mean, don't get me wrong, I want to have a change of scene, but there's something a bit magical about really getting to know kind of the corner of your city.
Yeah, right.
So many interesting things that I just walk past all the time. It's
yeah, exactly. You never stop and actually look at that building and read that plaque, or, you know, discover this amazing little park that you didn't realize was there beforehand.
Right. And when it's within walking distance, I feel like you have a weird little kind of ownership over it. If it's near you, you're like, oh, this could be my local, even if I just, if I'm too lazy to go there again. But yeah, I think that there's that exciting feeling for sure.
And I mean, you mentioned about getting around Tokyo by bike. I never knew Tokyo was, in my head, and maybe this is a myth to be busted as well, that Tokyo is, like, super busy, loads of cars and stuff like that. And I didn't realize it was easy enough to get around by bike.
It's kind of dangerous, I guess. Like, where I live is, like, close to a bus, but not close, like, 10 minutes walk, which seems kind of far, to a train station. So for me, like, my, like, neighborhood and where I go, like, I live just north of Shibuya. I work in an area called Omotesando, which is just the other end of Shibuya. So, like, my commute is really, really close. Like, there's a lot of trains and the train network is great, but once you have to switch between trains, you lose time. So it's bike friendly if you're brave and stupid, I think. But it's not, like, a bike-friendly city, you know? Yeah. I think I'm brave and stupid.
Good to know, good to know.
Yeah.
And has there been kind of, obviously, lots of places around the world are getting a bit of optimism from vaccinations. We talked about the vaccination program a little bit before, and you were saying it's kind of starting or just about to start.
The news is a little bit mixed, yeah. But it's starting, I think, yeah, it's either starting just now or it's starting in March, I think. So basically they want to have health workers vaccinated, and then, like, yeah, like we mentioned, the elderly population, which is quite a huge chunk of Japan's population, and then after that, people over 16. So it's just slowly, but I think, yeah, it'll be happening. But whether...
Is there some optimism around that, Lucy?
I think there's not, like... In general, like, a conversation-wise, people aren't super, don't really, like, a politically one way or the other, but I think people are kind of just don't have a huge lot of confidence because there's just been a lot of back and forth, and I think this happens with so many different countries, right? So it's hard to know exactly where, but I think, yeah... I haven't really had a discussion like I have with my family back in Australia about, like, oh, yeah, we're going to, like, the vaccination's happening, this is going to happen. I haven't really had that discussion with my friends here, so I think it's a little bit different. Why, I don't know. Okay. I'm not much of a sociologist, so I can't really say why, but I think, yeah, It's just a fact.
Cool. Okay. And I guess finally for this sort of section, you talked a little bit about like kind of, you know, local businesses and people going to big fancy hotels versus sort of the smaller ones and stuff. But in Tokyo itself, like obviously there's a massive range of like kind of shops, restaurants, bars and everything else. And have local businesses kind of been okay in the last year? I know they were obviously expecting a bit of a boom, and has there been a bit of trouble there?
I think like a local businesses, like super local businesses, kind of places mm-hmm. with like a no English that only regulars go to, I think in some regard they've been okay. I think the businesses that haven't done so well are kind of the businesses that are based, that have been propped up by international tourism. So like in Harajuku, yeah. there was a place called like the Kawaii Monster Cafe, and it was like this kind of crazy like candy acid trip cafe where they have like rainbow colored spaghetti with chocolate sauce and all those sort of places where you're not going to go there for a casual lunch. So those places shut down. A lot of like Harajuku's crepe, a couple of Harajuku's like crepe shops shut down, like in Akihabara, like the geek area, some of the like one of the main like the Sega building, one of them shut down. So also like I don't know if you know about Mario Kart. Tokyo has like a Mario Kart. So
I've seen this.
So it's like people love it. It's like you know, you're driving around the city in go-karts. Like it's, I can't believe it actually exists. Like the legality and the safety is crazy. It's literally people in like onesies, animal onesies, driving like actual go-karts through the city, through Shinjuku. And like, it's like, I didn't, honestly, like I have friends that had
it's nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts. And people had like, and it's the legality of the copyright has been really strange because it's like called Mari Kart. Okay. So it's not, it's been sued by Nintendo. But I think before, it's been sued by Nintendo before, but I think because they were making so much money from tourism that they can kind of pay the lawsuits and change it a bit and kind of get away with it. Because they were cruising through the city like all day, all night. And now it's finished, it's collapsed. So I think like the lawsuits plus the fact that like Tokyo, like, you know, you're not going to have a bunch of residents just cruising to work in a go-kart. So even though that, maybe that's fun, but that's shut down too. So,
So it's more kind of, yeah, businesses that really like that only exist really for outsiders. And actually, I guess within people's local areas, because you have been able to move about a bit, they've been relatively fine, touch wood.
I think to some degree, yeah, like people are doing takeout, and I think like some people, like some of the government support was okay. So I think like super local stuff is still going to be here when you both decide to come. So it'll be okay. Yeah.
Good.
Excellent.
Very pleased to hear it.
Fantastic. Cool.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
With the Summer Olympics hopefully going ahead this summer, what's next for Japan? So, Lucy, I wanted to kind of almost go through the boring stuff first. So when travelers kind of you know, return, hopefully, and fingers crossed they will do. And have the Japanese government sort of mentioned anything about kind of like long-term quarantining, PCR tests and COVID tests and etc.?
Yeah, so everything changes all the time, right? So I'm not too sure exactly what the situation is right at this moment, but in terms of like watching people, like it, making sure they're quarantining and everything, I had friends that came from, that went to London for Christmas, they came back, they did a 4 days quarantine and they were supposed to do home quarantine and they were naughty and they didn't, and it's kind of bad. So the government isn't really watching, like I know some places have tracking and all that sort of stuff, so it's not really strict in terms of like watching what you're doing, which is kind of a little bit, I think, a bit of a downfall. Yeah, I think, like, I honestly think Japan is probably so desperate for tourists that they'll most likely, at least what I can compare to, say, Australia, is they'll probably open up before, say, Australia opens up, because the need is kind of there. COVID tests here are really expensive to buy too. They're about like, if you're exposed to someone with COVID but you don't have the symptoms, you have to, and you want to get a test, it's about $400 US. So it's quite expensive.
Oh, really?
That is a lot of money.
So if you don't have any symptoms. So I think, yeah, in terms of like when people can travel again and stuff, I think the feeling is a little bit more relaxed, but still the numbers are low. So we're kind of in that lucky situation. So I think people are hoping, you know, we're going to know about the Olympics in May where the foreign people can come. So that's what their ultimate dream is. But I think the reality is probably quite far off.
So the Olympics are definitely happening.
The government says the Olympics are happening. The government says the Olympics are happening. But I think the people say, no, they're not happening, or they don't want them to happen, you know. So they don't want people to come. Like, honestly, I think that, you know, older generation and stuff, especially like, sorry, but people from like the UK that have a different strain, or people from the US where it's just a different world, is just like, I think that the risk worth the reward is probably not necessarily there. So in terms of like the encouragement for it to happen, I don't think it's gonna happen. I think, yeah, I think 31, the recent poll, like NHK, which is like our kind of BBC of Japan, did a poll, and about like 30 plus people said that they want it just to either be cancelled or just not happen, which is quite high.
30% said that. That is quite high.
I mean, I guess in terms of, are people more in favour of like delaying it to next year potentially, or is that just kind of seen as another, you know, annoyance in a way?
I think if it doesn't happen this year, because there's so many other things, there's like a World Cup and some other international sports event happening in 2022, if it doesn't happen this year, it's not going to happen. So I think it's like, the decision, I think the government's saying it's going to go ahead regardless. And then they're saying if foreign people come in, we'll let you know by May. But then, you know, it happens in July, August. So that's so, in Japanese.
Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, they say giddy giddy, which is just like just in time. So it's too short. So I don't think it's going to happen. It's giddy giddy. It's not going to happen. So let's see. It's sad, though, because the stadium is beautiful. You know, it was at half of the cancelled Olympics. So there's been like 4 cancelled Olympics in the world, and 2 of them are Japan. So it hasn't had good luck.
No, it hasn't had it.
Yeah, but
I didn't realise that. Oh, that's really tough. Poor Japan.
It's a little bit cursed.
I guess as well, there's been so much preparation over the years. Yeah. I guess, do people feel a bit disappointed? Was there much excitement for hosting it?
I think there was just too much of a drag. So I think like if it was cancelled and then that's it, it's like disappointment. But now it's like kind of just like dragging it out and dragging it out. I think the hope kind of just slowly, slowly, slowly diminishes, and then it's just going to fade away, which sounds really sad. But, you know, if it said no, then everyone has the heartbreak and the crying and everything. But it's kind of like ghosting on us or something. We don't really know where it's at, right? Yeah.
Well, we'll just have to see, I guess, and see what happens, really.
Yeah.
And I know, and again, we sort of talked about this off microphone earlier a little bit, but like, certainly over here, like Tokyo is like right at the top of loads of people's lists of where they want to visit after the pandemic. Are there kind of things that we can kind of look forward to in sort of like, let's say 2022, outside of the Olympics, that people can maybe visit or see, or, you know, other particular times of next year that might be worth visiting in?
Well, like Super Nintendo World just opened in Osaka, so you have that. It's like Mario themed, but in like Universal Studios. Also, like yeah, like I think maybe I mentioned earlier, like in the lead up to the Olympics, there was a lot of like construction, and we have like even in Shibuya, there's a whole bunch of new buildings that came up waiting for the tourists. There's a lot of like kind of this big push to like new like a lifestyle kind of modern lifestyle hotel. So like we just got an Ace Hotel in Kyoto. There's like a new hotel in Shibuya. So that kind of like modern hotels, like so many of those kind of lifestyle spaces opened up. So yeah. They're the kind of the main things. Like it's ready for tourists. It's kind of ready and waiting for everyone to come. So
yeah, I guess that infrastructure must be almost. I know it's the tourist infrastructure in Tokyo and Japan was huge anyway, but it must be kind of super huge now.
Super, super huge, yeah, for sure. There's a few areas, like this area called Miyashita Park, which is near Shibuya Station, and it's like this whole kind of like Tokyo Yokocho, which is kind of like drinking alleyway street that they created, and this like amazing like roof, like kind of high up open garden area. So it's a lot of construction and everything's kind of waiting for tourists. So yeah, when you visit, you have to come and enjoy.
Absolutely.
We'll add it to our list.
for sure. And how about you in the kind of future? Are you sticking around Tokyo for now, for the foreseeable?
I think so. I don't think Australia's going to want me to come back there for a visit right now, but I think so. Like, I obviously, like, I would love to be able to get out of Japan, but also, like, a lot of my work, I'm lucky enough to be able to go on so many trips within Japan. It's quite a good place to be trapped, I think. So in terms of the freedom of movement, but also kind of the relatively low number of cases, plus, you know, the amazing things you can see just a few hours outside of Tokyo. So I'll stay here for a while, then I'll hopefully go back and visit my family maybe when it's possible. So that's kind of my plan for now. Hang around for a bit.
Cool. Yeah, as you say, I think there's definitely worse places to be sort of locked down. Yeah. And for sure. And good that you're still managing to get around and explore. Maybe you'll get to see those, five or so areas that you haven't visited yet.
Yeah, right. My whole 10 prefectures. Yeah, I'll try and clock
ten
them.
10 prefectures.
The whole 10 prefectures. Yeah. I'll try and clock those. That sounds
cool.
That's my plan.
Awesome. On that note, thank you very much for joining us. I think, you know, me and Lucy have learned loads about Tokyo.
Yeah.
I already wanted to visit, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sold. You've really whetted my appetite, Lucy. I cannot wait to visit at some point, hopefully in the not too distant future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, you really painted a really lovely picture of the city and the kind of city that you don't always hear about as well. And just before you go, actually, I know you and you've been working with the team at DK on a book recently. So we have mentioned our like local series a few times on the podcast before. It should be coming out later this year. But you've been kind of, you know, helping to mastermind like a local Tokyo, right?
That's it. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Like I was saying to Lucy off mic before, it's my first book. So it's the first book that I have my name on it. So my mum is very proud and I'm excited to see it on the shelves. It's been a lot of fun. Working with Zoe, the other editor, is so easy to work with. And it's such a great opportunity to kind of showcase these parts of Tokyo that don't necessarily, you know, some publications or magazines are more interested in the like main tourist area. So it's so great to showcase these areas that otherwise maybe wouldn't get as much attention as they definitely deserve.
And from what you were saying earlier, like Tokyo sounds like it's got, there's so much to explore outside of those kind of main tourist areas and you know, a lot that's maybe not known about, which I'm quite fascinated to read about.
Right. And I, you know, I've lived here for like 5 years in Tokyo and I spend a lot of my time writing about Tokyo. But even doing this podcast, I feel like I don't even know anything about Tokyo because it's such a big city, you know, so it's kind of, but that's what also makes it great, I guess. Maybe I have imposter syndrome.
But there's always something... Yeah, maybe there's always just something new to explore.
100%, 100%, yeah.
Totally. Well, that book should come out later in the year. I'll be definitely reading it for one.
Thank you.
Good luck with it, Lucy. I know lots and lots of work has gone into it and other Lucy has been working on it too. Right? Cool. Okay. So thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Lucy.
All the way from Tokyo. And best of luck with the rest of sort of lockdown and vaccinations and so on, and maybe Olympics. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah. Thank you so much, both of you, for the time too.
So a huge thank you to Lucy, to the other Lucy, obviously.
Yes.
that was brilliant. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, and obviously Tokyo Like a Local is coming out later this year, which is really exciting, which Lucy's worked very hard on.
Very, very excited to read it. I think more so now than ever, really.
Definitely, yeah.
Inspired to plan a future trip to Tokyo? Whether you want to watch traditional Japanese theatre, sample in Michelin-starred cuisine, or take an unforgettable trip to Mount Fuji, your DKR Witness travel guide makes sure you experience all that Tokyo has to offer. Find it in all good retailers or via the link in our episode bio.
So once again, a massive thank you to Lucy Damon for joining us for this week's episode.
Huge thank you to Lucy. And you can join us next time where we'll be discussing Nashville.
Yeah.
So we'll be going across the pond,
yep.
Going to a city that's kind of synonymous with like music, with
yep.
With nightlife, and with all the things that we've kind of been missing.
Yes, bring
a hell
it
of
on.
A lot over the last year or so. So yeah, definitely bring it on. I'm very, very excited for that. So you can join us in a fortnight's time for that.
Yep.
And until then, we'll see you very soon.
See you soon. Where to Go was produced by the team at DKR Witness and presented by Lucy Richards and James Atkinson. For more information about DKR Witness, follow us on social media at DKR Witness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.